Good morning. Oh, better. Thank you. Thank you for being here. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here to this session of the Thursday Morning Roundtable. I want to give you a heads-up reminder that next week will be our last program of the year, the calendar year. We'll take a semester break, and then we will come back in February, the first week in February. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Syracuse Philharmonic. We'll have Ann Clark, the Dean of the School of Visual and Performing Arts at SU, one of her associate deans, Jeff Komenich. I know we remember him. He was a TMR member at one point. Possibly Patrick Jones, the head of the Setner School. But that will be next week. The final week of the year, the season. Also to remind you, as is our tradition, we have a Salvation Army Christmas Bureau kettle to make it easier for those of you who want to make a donation to the Christmas Bureau. And as always, the need is great. So that's at the registration table, and there it will also be here next week. So that's that. It's my pleasure today to introduce one of our newest TMR members, Kara Fay. Kara is a financial planner. She has her own business with Sagemark Consulting. She's a member of the governance board of the Women's Fund and their fund development director. She's been involved with other charities and organizations, and she is going to introduce today's guest speakers. Thank you, Kara.
Good morning. I'm delighted to introduce our guest speakers this morning, Matthew Millay and Tom Rhodes. Matt Millay was appointed Deputy County Executive for Physical Services in 2010. Prior to joining the Mahoney administration, Matt served as Executive Vice President and Acting President of the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation. During his tenure with EFC, Matt oversaw the administration and distribution of $500 million in federal stimulus dollars and launched the award-winning Green Innovations Grant Program, which promotes the adoption of innovative water treatment and conservation technologies. Prior to his service at EFC, Matt served Governor George Pataki as Program Manager in the Public Authorities Office and as Director of Environmental Programs. Currently, Matt has been charged by the County Executive to manage the county's Save the Rain effort, which is a multi-million-dollar public works program using both gray and green infrastructure approaches to mitigate sewer overflows in Onondaga Lake. Tom Rhodes is commissioner of the Onondaga County Department of Water Environment Protection. Previously, Tom was the executive director of the Onondaga County Resource Recovery Agency, and prior to that, a county administrator and county engineer in central Pennsylvania. Tom now leads a highly skilled work team of almost 400 county employees dedicated to improving the environment through the use of green infrastructure as well as traditional treatment facilities. Please welcome Matt and Tom.
Thanks, Kara. Everybody can hear me, and please bear with me a little bit. I've been on the job less than 100 days, so I don't even have that 100-day benchmark, and I guess to also introduce my boss. So be especially kind to me today. He's measuring everything that we're doing. But we're very excited to come in today and present to you. Wait till you see the presentation that Mr. Millay has developed. I think you're going to be very impressed with what's going on in our community. We are actually leading the nation. When I had the opportunity to change jobs, I really was looking forward to it so much, because what's happening right now in Onondaga County with respect to the water environment, it's right there at the forefront of what's happening in the nation, and I really am probably not qualified to say it, but I would say that we're pushing the edge on what's happening in the world. We are the leaders in a technology movement away from continued use of what we call gray infrastructure, and gray means as in concrete. So that's that built infrastructure that's traditional, which has its uses, but we are now moving towards a green infrastructure technology. And the combination of the gray and green infrastructure technologies now being taken throughout the nation towards the resolution of environmental problems. We have a lot of folks on the team. One of our county legislators is here. They're part of the team as well. But the county executive has taken this in a tremendously exciting direction, and I think Mr. Belay will help you with that. So please, let me introduce Matt and take it from here. Matt.
Thank you. We're very lucky to have Tom on our team. I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. I said, you're going to have to work a lot harder, and we're going to pay you a lot less. What do you think? And he said, I'll do it. I don't know why, but we're happy he said yes. So that was great. And Linda Irvin, thank you for coming. Linda's been a tremendous supporter on the legislature in general has really supported our efforts here. And I'm really thrilled to be here this morning to give you an update on just what we've accomplished this year and some of our teams here, which I'll introduce throughout the program. But we'll get started with the simple question of why are we saving the rain? You've hopefully heard the term save the rain, and the question leads to an answer of the county executive really believing that there was a better way to address the environmental problems in Onondaga Lake than building large sewage treatment facilities in the city of Syracuse. And this was something that she dealt with as a city councilor. She was very much opposed to it as a city councilor, and she ran for county executive in large part due to her desire to change course with this program. And we have a contrast point in our community of having one of these facilities constructed in 2007 at a cost of about $70 million. And what you'll see here is Onondaga Creek, and what happens is the stormwater flows into the combined sewer system in the city of Syracuse. About 400 cities throughout the United States have combined sewer systems where there is no separate storm system. Stormwater flows into the sanitary sewer system, and when you have a rain event of significance, it overflows through multiple points into water bodies like Onondaga Creek and Harbor Brook and Onondaga Lake. This facility was constructed to store some of that overflow and treat it with chemicals, mainly chlorine, and discharge it into the creek. And many argued that that was not the right approach to dealing with our combined sewer overflow problem in the city of Syracuse. And we were successful in fighting for a new path on that. The county executive was elected in 2007, took office in 2008, and fought to change course. And what I'm really excited to talk about today is what we're doing, not so much about the fight, but where we've ended up because of that. And as Tom mentioned, what we're doing is balancing gray and green. When you hear gray infrastructure, pipes, wastewater treatment facilities, pump stations, all of the conventional treatment trains that we've been used to for the past 30 years since the Clean Water Act was really put in place. The green is the new things that I look forward to talking to you about a little bit later, but I think you can see our point is that they work together. They're complementary. They're not polar. They're not opposing. Starting with the gray, it's important to reflect on some investments that were made. Congressman Walsh, Senator Moynihan were very, very advantageous to this community and leaders in helping to get the wastewater treatment facility on Onondaga Lake modernized and improved to the tune of $173 million in upgrades for phosphorus and ammonia removal. And those two elements were the key contributors to a lot of the pollution that plagued Onondaga Lake, not so much the hazardous waste from the other side, but the nutrients causing the algae blooms that you read about and I heard about and that I'm sure many of you dealt with when people said the lake smells funny today. That's due to the large nutrient loading that was coming from the wastewater treatment facility, which these investments have really helped to improve. And we'll show you some of the statistics on that towards the back end of the presentation. But because of these investments, we were in a position to go to the federal courts in 2008. And Matt Marcos here with CH2M Hill, who's our program manager on the green side, but he was part of the fight that we had with the county executive, with the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Attorney General, going to the federal courts and saying, there is a better way to do this. We would like permission from the federal courts to take this gray and green approach, and these are the areas of the city that we're now working in, and we have permission, as of November of 2009, to balance the gray and the green together and work in these three distinct sewer sheds and really achieve our milestones by 2018, to get those combined sewer overflows under control and continue to improve the water quality in the lake. We're doing that through some large gray investments, about $150 million worth of gray investments. This is the final part. That treatment facility I showed you earlier has a large conveyance going to it, which closes combined sewer outfalls along the creek. This is the last one of those. But you can see why the county executive and many others were opposed to this, because it's right in the middle of a neighborhood. This is not a discreet project by any means. They used dynamite the first time to blow a bedrock to get this giant 12-foot pipeline through a neighborhood. And this will be the final stretch of this pipeline. And it was ultimately originally going to continue much further down into the neighborhood. And fortunately, through this change of course, we were able to bring it about 500 feet further, and now we can stop. Another big project was the Harbor Brook Interceptor Sewer. This was the benefit of the stimulus program, which $12 million from the federal stimulus program really reduced the cost of this community for moving this forward. But this is a little blurry, but this is Fowler High School. We had to put the pipeline right through their football field and in front of the school. This was a very disruptive project, an important project, but you can just see how disruptive gray is when, on a scale like this, you can see where these things have to go. We're doing a sewer separation project right along. This is the Dinosaur Barbecue right here to give you a benchmark of it. This is one of our final sewer separation projects that'll be advancing next year. And we have two storage facilities that we're constructing. This is a 4.5 million gallon stormwater storage facility. When a rain event occurs, this facility will take some of that first flush that goes through the system, store it on site. This tank right here is largely underground and designed that way to be more visually appealing in the neighborhood. And also will have a lot of green infrastructure elements in it to help flush the system and capture stormwater on site. And then our other large stormwater facility is the 6 million gallon storage facility that we're now constructing in the trolley lot near Armory Square. And this is an alternative to the regional treatment facility that was originally intended to be there. And I think many people agreed that the right place to build a sewage treatment plant certainly isn't next to our burgeoning commercial district and the Museum of Science and Technology. So rather than building a sewage treatment plant, we're now building this facility, which we think is architecturally complementary to Armory Square. And it's a storage system where 6 million gallons of stormwater per event can be stored underground, contained during the event, and then released back into the sewer system and treated at the treatment facility on Onondaga Lake. They're not cheap, though. And that's a picture from an aerial picture of the construction commencing. We have some great, great contractors working on this. It's underway right now. And that's really the gray components. By no means insignificant, but the green side is, as Tom mentioned, the innovative, exciting and new part of the program, and the green side complements the gray. Good question. What the heck is green infrastructure anyway? I don't expect you to be able to read this, but this is a fun little chart that talks about not only what green infrastructure is, but these are all the ancillary benefits of green infrastructure. With gray infrastructure, you build a treatment system to treat stormwater. That's the benefit you get. One benefit: for $70 million, we can store 6 million gallons. That's great. If we invest $70 million in green infrastructure, as we intend to do, we get all of these ancillary benefits from green roofs, tree plantings, bioretention, permeable pavements. And this is a great little chart that was put together by a group called the Center for Neighborhood Technology out of Chicago, where they've really also led the way on the use of green infrastructure. And we heard about green infrastructure from a group called the Natural Resources Defense Council, who met with County Executive in 2007 and in 2008. And they presented her with this book, which I have the copy that was given to her in my office. And this book was very influential in showing the county executive and others that green infrastructure is, in fact, a possible technology to use for stormwater and combined sewer overflow issues. And this was just an example of, here's an urbanized area, and here's what it could look like with green roofs, green streets, and tree plantings. And here's just a simple solution to how we build our streets. Rather than having curbs driving rainwater into storm sewers or combined sewers, why not put a little cut in the curb and have it flow into a rain garden and percolate into the ground? And we're doing this in Syracuse right now. It starts with an idea, and I talk about this a lot when Matt's here, and I give him a lot of credit for putting this together. This was part of the presentation that was given to the federal judge to convince him that we could accomplish this mission of cleaning the lake using green infrastructure and gray infrastructure. And the simple point was, just look at this slice of the city of Syracuse and see all of the potential that we have for green infrastructure here, and we can get 10 million gallons in capture. And our ultimate objective is capturing about 250 million gallons per year, so we still have a long way to go. But 10 million gallons in capture and just this simple footprint, we propose doing a green roof on the On Center. Good news is, we now have a green roof on the On Center. 66,000 square feet of green surface with local soils planted in there, and we're working with Syracuse University and PhD students from Syracuse University have installed monitoring equipment into this roof so we can learn from this and we can find out what are the heating and cooling effects on the building. How is it really working in capture of stormwater? Is it doing what the models predicted? And we're really excited to be working with Dr. Cliff Davidson and his PhD students on that, and we'll have real-time data available from this facility on our website and their website if you ever want to see what happens to the green roof when it rains out. CH2ML proposed doing a cistern at the War Memorial. War Memorial is a very historic structure. We don't want to really disturb its appeal or its setting and put a green roof on it. So why not just capture the rainwater off the roof? And someone from our staff said, well, if we're capturing the rainwater off the roof, why don't we use it to make ice for the hockey team? And we built a system underground within the War Memorial now, and we're making ice for the Crunch using stormwater off the roof of the War Memorial facility. And as I understand it, the hockey players love it because for whatever reason, I'm sure a chemist could explain it, the ice is harder because we're making it with rainwater now rather than with potable water. So the hockey players are happy, which is a good thing. And we've done some great parking lot projects. This is a parking lot a year and a half ago at the county complex that really is just not that appealing. There was no plans to do anything about it. It was there. People parked on it, and they kind of dealt with the fact that it looked crummy. We instead repaved it. We have these permeable strips. You don't have to make it all porous. This is regular asphalt, but in the middle, these strips now have the stormwater diverted into it, and it percolates into the ground. And this is what it looked like this spring. No doctoring of this photo at all. It was green. It was beautiful. There's new stripes. And it gives you a larger sense of pride when you pull into it and you feel like you're going into something that somebody cares for. And that's some of the ancillary benefit of these green projects. This is the lot right near the Honda Center. I'm sure many of you have parked in this facility. This strip around it, we just carved it out. This is all now permeable asphalt. And we've repaved this too. Look like that, and now all the stormwater that hits this flows into that perimeter. And this now has a one-inch storm. 100% of the rainfall that hits it is captured on site, not diverted into the sewer system at all. And then it's hard to see them. You see a little shadow there. We have 14 electric car charging stations. Not that I would suggest buying a Chevy Volt these days. I don't know if anybody's been reading about that, but maybe the Leaf. If you buy a Leaf, you can go downtown. And you can plug it. You could plug it in today. They're working today, and I think you can just plug it in. And our partners, Synapse Sustainable Trust, is just allowing people to go in and plug them in for free. So if you have $50,000 and you want to buy an electric car, you can juice up downtown. And really, again, it went from this concept 3 years ago before a federal judge to now having this great concentration of green infrastructure right in the footprint of the county office buildings. And it gives us a real showcase to tell the community what this program's all about. And I don't know, Matt may be way smarter than I, but the county executive's office is right there. And she looks out over all of this stuff. So credit to the team for making this area a priority. You may have heard about our Project 50. This was just an ambitious goal that the county executive set for the team for 2011. And starting in 2009 and 2010 and making some progress, what we really wanted to do in 2011 was make a big impression, get a lot of projects into the ground so we could really demonstrate in venues like this what this program's all about to the community. Our team put together a great green infrastructure plan for the next 7 years, and we took a big chunk of it in 2011 and really put everybody to work, and they worked very hard. And not that I expect you to be able to read this, but we'll have all the projects up on our website. But we were able to get 60 projects through the pipeline this year, either under construction or constructed. And you really can't turn a corner in Syracuse now downtown without seeing some piece of this program moving forward. And it's pretty exciting to go down the street on Water Street, and I'll show you some of the pictures as we get through this. But we have 100 more projects in the concept phase right now for years ahead. So what I'm showing you next is just the beginning. This is Water Street, a rendering. This a year ago, again, it was just a concept. If you go to Water Street now, this is done. We still have to get some of the grass planted in there, but all of these pavers are in now. Next year, we'll be doing the other side of the street. Senator Valesky called our office and said, what are you guys doing down there? That looks fantastic. I want to help you with this. And he's reached out to the State Department of General Services to help us get the parking lot done on the other side of this here, so the state can become a partner on what we're doing now. So the excitement is really growing, and this block just looks tremendous now. It's beautiful. Connective Corridor, another great Syracuse University, City of Syracuse joint venture that we jumped into and said, hey, can we add some green infrastructure elements to that? And we're now investing $900,000 just in phase one of the project, where you'll see University Ave, including elements of our green infrastructure program, in addition to the bike lanes and the walking lanes that they've added into it. The Monroe Building, it's a private building. We have a public-private partnership program where we give grants to private buildings who help us to accomplish our mission of capturing stormwater. And this was done right outside of the county courthouses right over here. But this was a great project for a lot of reasons. It helps the building, great capture quality, but they worked with a group from, I think, South Syracuse, and there were students up on the roof, installing the roof, learning how to do this type of trade. So hopefully when the green roof business really starts to blossom in Syracuse and elsewhere, we'll have folks from here that know how to install this type of technology on the facility. They can go out and have that green job on their resume. Great partnership here with the Boeheim Foundation and the city and Skiddy Park. We had a meeting with Marilyn Higgins, who was working on this as part of the Near West Side Initiative, and she said they were going to be doing the basketball courts with the Boeheim Foundation, and we said, well, why don't we make them porous basketball courts? These are 100% porous asphalt, and they capture a tremendous amount of stormwater. We invested some dollars from the program in it in partnership with the Boeheim Foundation, and we look forward to doing more of these. But it's exciting to be able to show that we can do playgrounds, we can do parking lots, we can do parklands. The opportunities are really limitless when you really start to think about it. And this is one of our projects that you'll see come to fruition next year, right again near the Dinosaur Barbecue. This is where we can also come in and help situations where things just didn't go quite right. This is a beautiful park in Syracuse that for some reason had been sinking for years, and it needed to be fixed, and we're doing our sewer separation project, and now we're going to restore this park and put a lot of great green infrastructure elements into it. Education outreach is very important. Being invited to venues like this is very helpful to get the word out to the community. We have a great team working with us from the Environmental Finance Center at the Syracuse Center of Excellence, Baltimore Woods, the Onondaga Environmental Institute, the Onondaga Earth Corps, which is a great group of kids from the city that have been going out and planting rain gardens and helping us with our rain barrel workshops, and just doing a tremendous amount of research and outreach in our community, along with our website and our advertising campaign, which I hope you've seen some of. The website's very important to the program, though. We've decided that we want to open source this program. We want the world to have access to everything that we're doing. If you're driving down the street and you see a project like this and you say, I wonder how they did that, and you can find a picture that says, well, this is 100% porous asphalt and we've captured the stormwater from this street. This is right off of I-81 and Freedom of Espresso is right here. You can go to the website and find the technical drawings, and you can find out what kind of soil we used, what kind of stone base we put in, what was the mix for the asphalt. Not that I would go to look that up, but somebody might want to, and they can find it if they want to. We have fact sheets for every program, so if you really just want the surficial knowledge and you're driving down the street and you're saying, that looks like a Save the Rain project, you can go and see our fact sheet, and you can see that's the Pearl Street parking lot. We spent $397,000 on it. We're capturing 1.2 million gallons per year. So we're trying to make it very accessible and very open and available to anybody from any community to learn from what we're doing here. So we've really come a long way from the concept, the idea of green infrastructure, to implementing green infrastructure. And we've gotten some tremendous recognition in 2011, large part because of our change in course and our abandoning the sewage treatment plants, the aggressive nature of the Project 50. And in April, we were thrilled when the deputy administrator from EPA, the number two guy from the nation, came to town. He was a Maxwell graduate. I think he was happy to come back here and see us doing some great work. And they designated us one of 10 communities in the nation that are really leading the charge on this green infrastructure front. And then to come full circle, thinking back to how the county executive really got into the green infrastructure movement from the Rooftops to Rivers book in 2007, we're now in the new version of Rooftops of Rivers that was just issued 3 weeks ago by Natural Resources Defense Council as one of their marquee cities. And there's a whole case study in Rooftops of Rivers 2 about the city of Syracuse and what we're doing here. So that's just a really tremendous sign of how far we've come from reading the book and saying we could be like that. And now we're in the book, and hopefully other communities are really learning from us. And you can see that Matt Driscoll was right. We are an Emerald City. And I don't think they knew that they were stealing that title from him, but we'll take it because you see the company we're keeping here is tremendous. And I know Mrs. Strickland is here and New York City. We're tied with New York City. I got to beat Carter and get this one box checked off before he does, so I can say we have six and you only have five when he comes to visit. We're in a death match with New York City. We want to be far cooler than them in green infrastructure. They have a much larger budget than we do, though. But this is really a tremendous sign of just how far we've come, and we're really moving forward very quickly. And it's really exciting to drive around the city. And even putting together a presentation like this is challenging because there's so many different parts we could talk about. There's 10 different things I wish I had time to share with you today, but I know we have a time limit. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to the commissioner because one of the key elements that he and I talked about when he came in is one thing we definitely heard in the legislature is, well, why are you doing all this green infrastructure in the city? And the answer was, well, that's where the consent judgment problems were, but there's no reason why we can't expand it. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Rhodes.
Thanks, Matt. So we do have some next steps. I think the important part also that why did I join the team is when we talk about it, there's this sense of pride. And actually the next step in the process is actually engaging a larger audience, and that means our suburban communities as well. One of the things that's a challenge in a system like ours, and as Matt mentioned, there's about 400 systems like ours that see a lot of this aging infrastructure. Technology is such that a lot of these old pipes and old sewer lines, actually they leak. They leak the wrong way. That means groundwater and other forms of stormwater come into the sewer system, and we, all of us, as ratepayers, end up paying for the treatment of this water. So where we see the red boundaries, those are the areas of the sewer shed that are managed by the Onondaga County Sanitary Storm District. And what we're going to be doing is a $3 million suburban green infrastructure program. And that will start in 2012. Again, the county executive has moved forward with this. The county legislature is on the team, and we will be bringing these projects to the county legislature. The form of the projects, we're going to be going out to the municipalities. We're going to be doing grants with them so that their projects and programs, so this program, the pride that we have in our downtown community, will now spread and flourish throughout the entire county sanitary district. Pretty tight here on the end, I think. The results are remarkable. The part that I also invite you to take a look at is really what's happening with the lake. This lake is now an asset for our community, and I think that also changes the paradigm on how we need to think about all of our resources, whether it's the lake or the creeks. We are all now involved and engaged. No longer do we want to have a situation where we are avoiding the lake because it might not be looking right or smelling right, but now we're actually going to be engaging with it and engaging with its biology, engaging with a tremendous diversity of opportunities for recreation. And Matt talked a little bit about what's going on with the lake. Here's a great graphic that he put in. One of the things that's happening or happened in the past was there was a lot of nutrients. That's human fertilizer going into a very small water body. So I like to think of it as a lot of ponds around a golf course. You'll see them. They get full of algae. They get awful green. And a lot of that is just because there's excess nutrients going into those ponds. One of those key nutrients is phosphorus. And phosphorus is actually critical to the life of all organisms. But by managing this phosphorus load, we've actually changed the way that the Onondaga Lake and its entire tributary system is responding. So we no longer have algae blooms, and we also have much more oxygen in the lake, which means much more diversity of species and a lot better recreational opportunities. Again, there's milestones going on all over the lake. We do have the treatment and cleanup process, also by Allied Honeywell. They're investing hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're seeing that all the time. This community is enjoying a lot of great jobs associated with that, as well as real improvement in the infrastructure. This is, I think, yesterday's newspaper, Matt? Yeah, he's pretty good with the PowerPoint, like I said. And anyway, these are the triple bottom line. And I think, again, back to the gray infrastructure and those discussions, what we have actually are a lot of social benefits associated with the green infrastructure. That when I drove in here, I saw a lot of interesting landscaping in people's yards. No longer traditional landscaping of just a couple trees and shrubs, but now you see all kinds of grasses, all kinds of different things. Well, we're doing the same sort of thing in our urban community, and now we're going to be doing it in the suburban community with these green infrastructure programs. We're really greening parking lots. We're greening streets. We're changing the whole composition of our community, and how can you not have pride in being part of that? And this is what's going to continue to happen. It's just so exciting. So there's a lot of social benefits in the green infrastructure that are kind of beyond what a regional treatment facility might have ever brought. There might be one-time jobs in a regional treatment facility, but now we really have a ton of pride. Of course, there's a great environmental contribution by all these things, and economic as well. You know, as we continue to improve the core of our community, there is a resurgence of industries and commercial activity going on all over the city of Syracuse, and I'm really personally proud of being part of that team that made these decisions to change the course of the way we take care of our community. So we're getting to the very end here with the thank you, and the next part is going to be the question and answer.
Thanks to both of you. I think we have a question right here. Tony.
Thanks. Well, first, of course, I want to thank Matt and his group. Down in Armory Square, we've been working with them for probably close to a year now before the project started with the trolley lot. And so for us, you know, it was a concerning moment when that trolley lot was going to close. But all along the way, they've really worked with us to, you know, make sure it was a smooth transition, make sure the construction didn't impact Armory Square. And they came up with these great ideas with regards to, a parking lot that's going to look much better than it, you know, than it does right now, and a lot of improvements to the area along the way. And so we're really appreciative of that. I mean, it's an important thing to do, you know, for all the right benefits, but it was also important that you guys work so closely with the businesses in Armory Square to make that happen. So thank you for that. My question is really more about, and part of the benefits too I didn't mention was the most is actually looking at doing some work on our roof, and we're going to capture that stormwater too through an idea that the other Matt Marcos had regarding capturing all that stormwater and utilizing it to do some of the flushing in the actual facility that's going to be behind the most. So we're excited to be part of that too. But my question is more, what can all of us do as members in the community to help support your efforts? You know, obviously, you know, keeping an eye on the website and keeping an eye on all the projects and supporting those separately. But is there anything you need all of us to do as members of the community to kind of help you continue to succeed in the way you guys are?
Thank you. Tony's been a great partner as the head of the Armory Square Association, and we absolutely were cognizant of the disruption that the trolley lot project could have there, and even though we weren't building a sewage treatment plant anymore, we were still going to have a couple of years of construction, and we've come up with some great ideas. There's complimentary parking throughout the holiday season at the Washington Street Garage now, so if you want to go downtown, there's parking available, and we encourage everybody to go down there. And I went down on Saturday night and had a great time, and I think Armory Square is just such a valuable component of our community. But to your question on what people can do, what we've done in the city, which we'd love to also do in the suburb, is simple things like the rain barrel program. Matt sent me an email the other day about how the city of Milwaukee has given out 3,600 rain barrels, and they're capturing 800,000 gallons per year in doing that. We need to get better with that in the near term, because that's where people can take a sense of ownership and do a simple thing of putting a 50-gallon rain barrel along their home and be a part of the program. The other one is just helping us to drive the message forward. We still have some issues we need to tackle with ordinances in the city, and planning departments need some education on this, and really working on this new mindset of managing stormwater on site and not just building retention ponds and dumping stormwater into tributaries. That's just something that the federal government, the state government, and even we shouldn't tolerate anymore. There are simple technologies to use to manage stormwater on a site-specific basis and keep it out of our waterways, and that's a great way to think about it. I don't know, Tom, you want to add to that?
Just real quickly, I think the opportunities with the green infrastructure, with the gray infrastructure, we were not associated with those technologies. We flushed it, and we didn't care what happened. Actually, with the green infrastructure, we're all engaged. It's no longer 382 people at Water Environment Protection who are taking care of the environment. So what I think is really important is taking this to the next level, our engagement as a community in maintaining. You know, if we have a lot of pride in these tremendous parking lots, it's going to be, hey, let's not litter them up. There's still a significant thing that we can all do to create this investment. Yes, there's things we can do with rain barrels. There's things we can do just with the way we treat the environment, because actually it all goes to the lake, whether it's here in DeWitt or whether it's in the city of Syracuse or whether it's in the northern suburbs. So there's a lot that we can do together, and it begins with just really starting to become a part of that management system with every action that you take. And we're trying to much improve our website with things that people can do. Obviously, go there, go to the Save the Rain site.
As an active environmentalist, I'm just thrilled with what you're doing. However, at the Thursday morning roundtable, we like to hear also about the challenges. And I have heard that there have been challenges with private property owners going through the process of your advisory committee in terms of getting the approvals to get the project, their projects going. I'd like to hear, what, as a startup thing, how did it go? And again, what are the challenges in implementation of this great program?
Definitely appropriate, and again, not a lot of time with the presentation, but I'm glad you raised it, because it is rife with challenges, and a mantra that we've adopted that we don't put on our presentation is, everybody says they're for green infrastructure until they decide they're not. Sounds like a great idea, but I can't do that. And on the Green Improvement Fund, which is our public-private partnership, we have to be very cautious, because we're giving away public money to a private entity. That roof on the Monroe building is not a public roof, it's a private roof. And what we were trying to do, and I think we've been very successful on this front, is develop a very transparent and thorough technical process to insulate us from any accusations of favoritism or any impropriety, because what we're really trying to do is capture stormwater. That's our ultimate objective. And when we look at a project, the debate we're having with a potential partner is, how much stormwater are you capturing, and how much is it going to cost? And the metric we're shooting for is to pay about 35 cents a gallon to save rainwater. That's a cost-effective way for us to manage the rainwater. And the chart I showed you before, the $11 million we spent this year captured about 65 million gallons in rainwater at a cost of about 17 cents a gallon. So we're doing really well. But when we do work with a client-by-client basis, we have to have that discussion with them. Someone might propose something that costs $6 a gallon, and they think it's a tremendous idea, and it sure is going to help their building. It's not going to help us, though, because $6 per gallon is just far too expensive. So that's a challenge, though, because someone comes to us and says, I have a great idea, and you need to support me. And we say, we absolutely support you, but it's just not cost-effective for us. And people are disappointed when you tell them no. But the hard part about running a grant program is, more often than not, you're saying no than yes. But when we do say yes, we make sure we're saying yes because we have a technically sound rationale for doing so.
It's a fine presentation, but I still have two questions for you. Most of us here are homeowners, or many of us are. what can an individual homeowner do? Would you amplify the term rain barrel? I mean, it's a barrel that's got a little hole at the bottom, so it runs out slowly instead of fast. And so that's question number one. Question number two, if you own an office building, as I do, and you want to put a green roof on it, is there any community fund that helps you do it? After all, if you put something like that, you got to check your structure that when you're retaining the water on the roof that it doesn't collapse the building. Those are my two questions.
I'll take these, and I think they're great questions. Again, what can we do, both as residential property owners or commercial property owners? The residential property owners have a lot of ways to help. The rain barrel program is designed to actually capture rain coming off roof gutters and roof leaders and store it and then release it gradually so that it doesn't overwhelm the system, because that overwhelming of the system actually tends to cause these overflows of unsanitary water into the tributaries of the lake or into the sewer system. So there's rain barrel capture, and rain barrels are available in certain parts of the community today, mainly in the city combined sewer sheds, for all property owners at no cost. And again, that's kind of a great save the rain tag. There are rain barrels, obviously, throughout the community if people are interested in that engagement, but there's other things one can do. There's an awful lot of older suburban homes today that probably have their sump pumps, unfortunately, connected to the sanitary sewer. Instead of spilling that, which patently clean water coming out of a sump being directed into a sewer system, and then when we have a heavy storm or springtime, all of that clean water is going into the sewer system, and we're all actually paying for the treatment of it. Why don't we instead discharge that water into a backyard rain garden? Those are the type of things that could happen. Disconnecting roof leaders, obviously disconnecting sump pumps, and all the plumbing fixtures that, quote, don't need to go to the sewer system could be disconnected. Obviously, there's low-flow fixtures that could also help to reduce the amount of loading that we're putting into our sanitary system. And again, when we talk about commercial buildings, there is this really tremendous program. I think it is one of the most challenging, yet it is one of the most innovative programs about green investment in the commercial areas in the city sewer sheds, where we do have a grant program, and yes, there are engineering problems associated with perhaps green roofs will not work on every building, but there are a lot of different program constructed ideas that are all on the Save the Rain website as to cisterns, rain gardens, you name it. There are porous pavement technologies. There are all sorts of green investments beyond roofs. So please take a look at the Save the Rain website. Think about borrowing that technology if you're not in the grant program area. And think about talking with your town and village persons, because we will be coming out with $3 million of grant programs to take this into the suburbs in 2012.
If you're not in the catchment area, Tom, but you're interested, you have a commercial building and you're interested in the roof, is there any technical assistance available, or are you on your own at this point?
Truly, you're probably on your own, but for the fact that there are a tremendous amount of, and Mr. Marco is here, most of their great designs are right there for everybody to borrow and use and transfer that technology to your own application, and it's a tremendous wealth of information.
I wanted to ask you about education. One of the things that Okra, I think, is very well known for and does so well is education, particularly their newsletters. I've always learned so much from that. Are you planning to do that type of education process now? Because having a great website is terrific if you need to go specifically to look up something. Most of us, frankly, are not going to go to your website or Okra's or anybody else's unless we have a specific reason. So there may be things that change over time that we're not aware of. So what are your what is your thinking in regards to education?
Well, I'm fortunate enough that the deputy county executive thought of that. And in the 2012 budget that was approved by the county legislators, there's several hundred thousand dollars of additional public education money actually for the suburban areas. So we are going to be taking our public education program countywide. We would like to engage all of those technologies, and actually Madison Quinn is here. We are using some of the digital technologies right now, but we will be embracing a much larger public education program again, because there's only 382 of us, maybe 383 counting Matt, that are on the county team, but there are over 250,000 people that we need to have start embracing with day-to-day activities how to take better care of what is now a tremendous asset. We've moved the lake to such a great status of both being recreational that now we have the obligation to actually take our message from this group to our community, to our neighbors, and continue to talk about all of us have a role to play in keeping the lake clean.
Is there a way now to sign up for updates? There is. So if we go to Save the Rain, we can sign up with an email address to get regular updates?
Sorry. There's the Save the Rain newsletter, and if you put your email address in, it will email you every month our e-news, so you can get updates on what's happening, featured projects. Yeah. I'm the website guru. So.
Thank you. I thought I'd seen it, but I wasn't sure.
Doing our best on the social media front too, so if you're Facebookers, which it seems the entire universe but me is now, we encourage you to like us on Facebook, and then when Madison does do an update on Facebook, it'll hit your wall and show you that there's some activity there. So we are absolutely trying in a low-cost way, not publishing a lot of materials that tend to be thrown away or not utilized, but there's a newsletter which I encourage you to sign up for, and we've already had a discussion with Tom's former colleagues at Okra to see if we can blend into their tremendous listserv that they've worked for years to put together and get people's permission to use that listserv so we don't have to duplicate the effort. So if you're on the Okra listserv, you might get a note from us soon asking if you'd like to receive the Save the Rain newsletter too.
Great idea. Thanks.
I'm curious about the grass that's growing on these roofs. Is it slow growing? How tall does it get? And I'm assuming it does not require mowing.
We use a growth medium called sedum, and it's a low growth, low profile, very hardy and very low maintenance medium that's been used on roofs for years. And it's remarkable when you learn about this that you see a community in Germany that's on a similar latitude to the Northeast, where it's just green roofs as far as you can see. And really what we've done is adopted their approach to that green roof growth medium, the sedum, and you lay it down and you leave it there, and it's really maintenance-free for years, which is a tremendous way to do it. Now, I'll let Matt add to that, too, because he's our technical expert. But I was guaranteed I don't have to mow the green roof at the upper.
You don't have to mow the green roof. Okay, sedum. S-E-D-U-M, right?
That's correct. I just want to add to that in addition to sedum, there are other species that are native and could be utilized in green roofs. One of the assets that we have here in this community is not just Syracuse University. I actually sit on the SUNY ESF Board of Trustees. Dr. Leopold is undertaking a study to utilize additional species in green roof systems. So we're looking forward to the results of his study, but there could be an additional dozens or maybe even 100 additional species that we'll start utilizing over the next few years and see how they survive green roof installations.
That's true. I seem to remember being on the Center of Excellence roof, and one of the issues was that not just flat roofs, but they're also experimenting with sedum on a slanted part of the roof. I think it was accidental, but they're experimenting. Rachel.
Yeah. First of all, I need to say, as the vice chair of the Okra board, we missed Tom a lot, but we're very glad that he's still serving this community, because we all benefit from having him around. This is a follow-up question about maintenance, because even though you don't have to mow the green roofs, there's a lot of maintenance for green infrastructure that's really different from the maintenance required for gray infrastructure. I have a rain barrel, and I know if I don't empty it before the next rainfall, then it's not doing any good at all. So this is really just a follow-up question about what kinds of plans you have for maintenance of all of this infrastructure.
The rain barrel one, then turn it over to Tom because there's a good story. But the rain barrels in particular, you're absolutely right. They don't do us any good if they fill up with rain on the first rainfall of the year and they sit there all year full. And that's an obligation of ours, and that's where we want to use against social media, whether it's just an email or a Twitter feed or a Facebook feed, to say to our customers who have the rain barrel, rain's over, empty your rain barrel, get ready for the next one. That's that ongoing communication we need to have through our rain barrel program. It's not as easy as just giving somebody a rain barrel and say, here you go. We need them to be effective. And with similar to the other green, I'll turn it over to Tom because this is a big part of the discussion that he and I had with him coming on board.
Yeah. So the maintenance aspects of green infrastructure are there. And actually, again, my core message, if you leave today, is actually we're all involved with that maintenance. The maintenance begins with keeping those green infrastructures, those rain gardens, those sort of things, frankly, litter-free. They need to be an asset, and they need to remain an asset. If we have a rain garden and it gets blocked up with paper cups or something like that, it's not going to function as well. Again, having that pride. It's now attaching us to Onondaga Creek with a great walkway. All of those things are beautified, but actually they're also much improved. All of this green infrastructure is much improved if properly maintained. That means you're going to hear more about a litter reduction message. It means that things like the porous pavements, they can't really become blocked up with cigarette butts, can they? Unfortunately, that's something that we're going to have to work on together. We actually have to engage in street sweeping programs much more actively to make sure that there's nothing that's going to block these porous pavements. Or we're going to have to, I think it's a great opportunity to also utilize some of the folks in our community in, frankly, green jobs to help us maintain these beautiful pieces of infrastructure. We have some interesting procurements that we're going to be doing, but part of that process is going to be helping a larger part of the community, again, be much more engaged with the environment, not just in its recreation, but in the care for it.
My question goes to New York State and what kind of resources they might be helpful with. The first one has to do with Matt Driscoll, who you briefly mentioned. Apparently, he's near to this topic at the state level. Has he been an asset in any way? And also, coming from New York State, is it more than just funding that they might be able to provide for what you're trying to do?
Absolutely. And Matt's been a tremendous help. He's doing a great job at EFC. He's continued the growth of the Green Infrastructure Program and added $20 million to that for our next round of funding. We benefited last year from $700,000 grant for our War Memorial project that I talked about earlier, that they, I think, were very excited to see us doing a water reuse project. Unfortunately, his ability to help us is restricted by the benevolence of the federal government as he's running a state and federal program. And there's still a very strong partnership with EFC. And ultimately, over the course of the program, we will save about $30 million in avoided interest costs by financing these projects through the Environmental Facilities Corporation. So that's one way that the state's absolutely helping us. To your other point is they're helping us by allowing us to do what we need to do and partnering with us on changing course and saying, yes, green infrastructure is a solution. And that goes back to everybody's for green infrastructure until they're not. Is we can have a discussion with the highest levels of the Department of Environmental Conservation and the highest levels of EPA, and they can say, you should do this, and then we try to do it. And someone who didn't get the memo at lower levels of DEC might say, explain to me again why you think green infrastructure is a good idea, because it sure was a lot easier when you just built the pipe and I could measure that and figure out if you were doing your job or not. So we have those challenges every day, and I think the message is starting to percolate down a lot better. But where the state comes in, where the federal government comes in, is having that leadership view of saying what Syracuse is doing is on track and on target, and we support them. And that's why it was so important to have Bob Perciasepe, the deputy administrator, come to town and say, what's happening here is special and important, because that resonates throughout the entire Environmental Protection Agency, that we're on the team. We're trying to be helpful. The same with DEC. Jim Tierney was here a few weeks ago, and he's an assistant commissioner for water resources. Hugely helpful in getting us to change course. Very influential within the department in getting them to say, we can do this a different way. And his support has been invaluable. So that's another way the state helps us. But having Matt Driscoll in Albany in the position he's in is absolutely very beneficial to us.
Speaking of Albany and the federal government, has there been any assessment, or is there any relationship between Save the Rain and the Interstate the I-81 corridor study? That is, as the I-81 challenge process is going on and State Department of Transportation is doing studies on alternative to replacement of I-81, is the stormwater management piece part of that? Because I would imagine that there's a lot of stormwater that comes off that pavement, which isn't porous, that then goes into the sewer system.
Well, absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of gray infrastructure that exists, and all of those sort of studies that are involved in changing highways or changing all of that gray infrastructure, they absolutely look at what they're going to do with stormwater. And we are definitely fortunate to have on our team CH2M Hill. They're actually a national team. They are helping to promote the green infrastructure and capture all that stormwater. We're still in that dialogue about what will actually happen with I-81, but what we are seeing, there are a number of what we call corridor projects that are part of our green infrastructure program. So we have the connective corridor, but also the I-81 corridor. As that evolves, I am very comfortable saying that there will be a tremendous amount of new and visionary technologies that will be incorporated in that. I guess I'll take a little moment just to also honk what's going on here at the federal level. Maybe Mr. Millay won't talk about it, but I will for him. We've been invited actually to also come down and talk a little bit through the request of the EPA to talk to the folks from the state of New Jersey and help them understand actually transferring our technology here in New York State and in Syracuse in particular as to what we're doing. We've been invited by the EPA to help talk to the highest levels of New Jersey to help them understand how this technology change can be so important for their social community, for their environment, and for their economy. So again, I think what you're seeing here, leadership at a lot of different levels, county executive and the team that's involved here, we are now actually transferring our technology to other states, and I think as part of that, there will be a much, much deeper understanding at the federal level and at the state level. And I'm looking forward to, instead of people keeping score about how many feet of pipe were put in the ground, how many different rain gardens were constructed, and how many different neighborhoods were improved by these programs, rather than just measuring feet of pipe or dollars spent on gray infrastructure or gray treatment.
Thank you, Tom Rhodes. Thank you, Matt Millay.